KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. He doesn't crave.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood, Hollywood.
This week on The Business, actress Ileana Douglas was frustrated by failed TV pilots, so she pitched a web series in which she plays herself working at IKEA. Now, Easy to Assemble is in its fourth season, plus turning Daniel Day-Lewis into Abraham Lincoln. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I am joined by my banter buddy, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, as you know, huge piece of business for Netflix and Disney this week, a huge deal that, in the view of Netflix, certainly transforms it into the equivalent of maybe an HBO or Showtime.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't have to subscribe to DirecTV or have Time Warner Cable to get it. I mean, this to me is, you use the word transformative. I think that's absolutely right. A lot of money for a 3-year deal that doesn't start until 2016, $1 billion, a ton of money. But I think it really does change the landscape. We've talked a lot about Netflix and its evolution, a lot of bumps in the road. And now with this deal, Netflix previously only had kind of secondary and tertiary content from companies like Relativity Media and Film District. Now it has Pixar, it has Marvel, it has Disney, it has some catalog stuff. It is now a major movie supplier. And it's taken this deal from Starz, which, as you know, is a cable company. And I think it really says a lot about the changing nature of how people watch and where they watch movies.
Netflix had established itself as a place where you maybe watched Mad Men. If you didn't watch it on AMC, you went and binge-watched it on Netflix. It had somewhat older TV content and movies as well, but not the freshest A-list stuff. And this Disney stuff is A-list and very strong. And as we've discussed in the past, they are also at Netflix making original shows. Next year they will have House of Cards, which is this David Fincher-directed remake of a British series starring Kevin Spacey, and they'll have Arrested Development, which has a very passionate niche audience. They're in talks maybe to participate in reviving The Killing, this AMC series that stirred a lot of controversy but was dead after two seasons. It may be back from the dead. So this does give Netflix an array of programming to lure people and may make it harder for other companies down the road to get the sweet deals from Netflix that they were getting in the past, because Netflix doesn't necessarily have to overpay and be as hungry.
Yeah, unless, of course, they start raising their rates to pay for this Disney deal. So I think if you're a Netflix subscriber, I think you're absolutely right. 60% of Netflix's business used to be coming from TV and TV reruns. Now I think it's a premium movie company provider. And again, it may mean that when you look at your next cable bill or DirecTV bill, you're going to think twice, because Netflix and other companies like it are getting better and better content, and they're not relying on cable or satellite to bring it into your house.
So that was the good news for Disney. On the bad news for Disney, we will just mention that Disney was stuck with the largest verdict in a profits case in the history of Hollywood. That has been upheld on appeal. This involves Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And it was a staggering sum.
It was a $319 million verdict against Disney, and this was based on how Disney and its ABC network accounted for profits that should have been, in the jury's mind, attributed back to Celador, which created Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So Disney appealed, and the Ninth Circuit denied its appeal, which basically means unless the U.S. Supreme Court intervenes, which I would say is a real long shot, Disney is on the hook for either the $319 million or, as what will likely happen, some sort of settlement with Celador, which will still be a massive figure. So they get a lot of money out of Netflix and they pay a lot of it back to Celador.
Salador should do very well in this. And, you know, the court did acknowledge that the contract was ambiguous, but said that juries can interpret ambiguous contracts. And that's exactly what they did.
It just means that the next 90-page agreement will be 190 pages. So it's the full Employment Act for transactional lawyers.
And thank God for that. Meanwhile, also fully employed right now are Oscar and awards campaign strategists. And Steve Pond, an Oscar watcher and awards watcher over at The Wrap website, came up with a piece about the stuff that is being sent out by the studios to woo votes. Now, you know, John, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has rules which preclude people from sending a lot of swag and stuff to Academy members. But always, 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 these strategists find a way to get around those rules. And this article listed some of the stranger and more imaginative offerings, such as something from DreamWorks promoting Lincoln, the A. Lincoln Cookbook, and a digital postcard DVD from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum.
I thought it was a very funny story. And it's true that awards voters at this time are inundated not just with screeners, but all sorts of come-ons, invites to cocktail parties and whatnot. And the Academy, as you said, has tried to kind of limit this kind of campaigning. But for these wobblers, the cookbook thing like that, they're really unable to restrict them. So the studios are taking full advantage. And if you're an Academy member, it's a great time of year because you don't have to do a lot of Christmas shopping.
I don't receive any of this kind of correspondence and these goodies, John, as a business reporter, which makes me sad because that means I did not get the basket that Pixar sent out to promote Brave in honor of St. Andrew's Day, John, the feast day of the patron saint of Scotland, conveniently on November 30th. I lost out on the haggis, the Johnny Walker Red, as well as the cracked black pepper flavored potato chips.
The office was sent the gift basket, and I have to say the scotch is quite good.
Okay, John, well, stay sober.
I will.
And thank you very much. That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. You can banter about Hollywood news on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. And you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Kim Masters. John is J.G. Horn. And Darby is at Darby KCRW. Coming up, what can you make with Swedish meatballs and inexpensive furniture? Actress Ileana Douglas turned those ingredients into a job. Easy to Assemble is a web series, now in its fourth season, that stars Ileana Douglas as herself, an actress who takes a job at IKEA. The series is shot in an IKEA in Burbank, even as customers shop.
Well, as an IKEA coworker, you will have many responsibilities.
Okay.
But first things first, no standing on the furniture. Okay.
Douglas had spent years in the business, during which she appeared in such films as Ghost World and To Die For, and TV shows including 6 Feet Under and Ugly Betty. But as the Great Recession hit, Douglas was finding it tough to get acting gigs, and she'd shot 3 pilots that didn't get picked up. So she came up with the idea of a sponsored web series. She tried to talk Ford into doing a show in which she would drive her old car across the country. That was a no-go. But through Ford's ad agency, she got a meeting with IKEA.
They were looking for a way to do something to, you know, freshen up the brand. And I was hip. And the perception was that it was, you know, kids who needed college furniture used IKEA. And they wanted to change their image. And they thought that I could somehow help them do that.
So that bring was, a different demographic.
Exactly. Okay. That was the original concept. But in the process of talking about doing the interstitials, and because I was doing Pittsburgh at the same time with Jeff Goldblum, and it was, you know, very very improvisational film, I started to think more and more, what if I do this idea where I play myself and I go to work at IKEA? And they love that idea. And, you know, I mean, I think the hitch was saying, you know, can you get Jeff Goldblum to be in it? And I said, I think so.
He owes me one.
Yeah. And so then it took off from there. But again, it was a completely for fun. I never dreamed 4 years ago. It was supposed to be a fun little thing. And I went in and we did the show. And the creative freedom I had was like a drug. It was just intoxicating. We got to do, you know, the show that I wanted to do. And
they don't say, you know, you can't show. What do they say? You can't show IKEA furniture breaking.
I've been giving two notes
right
in 4 years. And they know this. I mean, we make, you know, every year we premiere the show as a film, because we shoot it as a film, as a kind of a low budget independent film. And then we break it up in episodes. And they know, I say this every year at the premiere, but I've been giving two notes. One note was that in the first year I wrote, my character was having ice cream because they sell ice cream at the store. And my note was, we don't sell ice cream. It's frozen yogurt. The other note was in season two, we were shooting. The storyline is that Tom Arnold and I, Tom wants me to shoot a sex video with him to revive my career. And then we reveal that we're actually not in his house. We're in an IKEA. And their note was that we had to make sure that we kept the aisles free so that people could continue to shop while we were while we were shooting the sex video. So the sex video part was okay.
Right. That's
but
fine.
But the safety issue, it was crucial. We couldn't in any way have a safety issue.
So you have an array of actors coming in, like obviously many of whom are your friends.
Some cases they are. In some cases they're not. Like, for instance, Roger Bart is on the show. I met him doing another show that I do, called a live theater show called Celebrity Autobiography. And we did a piece together and we just kind of hit it off. And usually the way it works is I meet someone, I'm a great admirer of them, I think, how the hell am I? I've got to figure out some way.
How do
to
I
work.
Meet this guy?
How do I work with this person? They must be on my web series. So a lot of it is like that. Sherry O'Terry, Tim Meadows. Some of these people I was not necessarily friends of. I was just like uber fans. Some people, it's been amazing. Like, we've had somebody drop out, and then I just cold called Ricky Lake and was like, please, will you please come on my show? And you're negotiating like, okay, I can be there for an hour. So it
runs. We'll give you the blue M&Ms or whatever.
Well, luckily she had to shop for someone's baby shower, which is the biggest problem of shooting in an IKEA.
Right, it's so distracting.
The cast and directors wander off to shop.
Do you have to have your whole house now IKEA'd up? Is there a clause in your contract, IKEA-only furniture?
Well, we have a joke on the show that I say that I, yes, I get free IKEA furniture, which I immediately sell on Craigslist, because it's a great way to meet college guys. After 4 years, I got a bike from IKEA, which I did have to put together.
Was it easy?
It was pretty easy to assemble. It took all day and a couple glasses of wine. But
it sounds so not necessarily easy, but
we put it in the show.
Yeah.
Another great fun thing about the show is it's all the behind the scenes. Like, we're shooting in a live working store. I mean, normally they have, like, on a movie set, what they call a lockup. And it's quiet on the set. Nobody can go in there. Okay, IKEA is the complete opposite, is that you have shoppers walking into the frame. People are always, the actors and the director, every year they say the same thing. They're like, oh, it's really like you say. Like, they don't stop shopping. We're shooting a scene. And, like, we had Patricia Heaton, and we were doing a dinner scene, and she said, oh, I'm really shooting, and people are walking by going, there's the lady from Everybody Loves Raymond. I'm like, I know. To me, I just think I'm in heaven, because it's combining a live theater with filming, sort of a, you know, indie vibe. But I think it lends a vibrancy to the show that maybe another web series doesn't have.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with actress Ileana Douglas, whose IKEA-branded web series, Easy to Assemble, has recently launched its fourth season. She won't reveal the budget other than to say it's about the same as a small independent film. IKEA pays the bills, but Douglas produces and owns the show. She's found unexpected benefits in producing it, and she's not the only one.
You know, we're a complete union show. We've been a union show from the very beginning. And
which means you have to pay people real money.
Yeah. You know, people are working or paying their health benefits. I feel very proud of that. I mean, like, I'm giving
That's huge for people who are maybe not working as much as they need to keep the SAG membership.
Exactly. And people have said that to me. Like, they've made more money working on my show than other film projects that, you know, that they've done, or other new media projects, as it's called.
I mean, you must have a fair bit of opportunity, not to disparage anybody, but, you know, the business is in such sorry shape that people probably have a hearty appetite to do something,
yes,
get paid and have some fun.
Yeah. In the old days, like, Be On My Web series was like, you know, hey, want to do jury duty down in, like, Pasadena? And they'd run. But now it's amazing.
Tell me more.
Yeah, I have people that, I mean, Melanie Mayron, who directed the season this year, you know, she's my neighbor. And, like, she used to run the other way. Like, oh, there's Ileana.
She was 30-something.
Yes. And she's, you know, directing now. And so she directed this season, and she's directing other web series. I mean, it's becoming the norm. And everyone's looking for that web series that is going to transfer, you know, over to television. I think that, again, like, things that a couple years ago people said, oh, well, that's crazy, are again now, you know, because the power has been given to the viewers and the fans, which for me is an amazing thing, because it just gives you another avenue of somebody, you know, a door shuts and they say, oh, well, nobody really wants to see you on TV. And you go, really? Well, because 1.5 million people do. We're like,
I think
right,
you're beating,
here.
Yeah, certain.
And another
broadcasters.
Another great thing about the show is the demographics. You can kind of prove that the demographics go over a wide area. So if somebody wants to pigeonhole you and, you know, you pitch it, you know, like, say, well, you want to do like be on a women's network or something like that, you have all these analytics that show all the people that are watching the show. And I think that that's, you know, amazing.
There was some awkward news. I think IKEA had to apologize recently for using workers in Germany and East Germany that were... Not volunteers, let's put it that way. Do you feel like that's a thing you would deal with on that show?
Except in a funny way. No, probably not. I mean, I think that, you know, since our show takes place in Burbank, thank God.
Not Berlin.
You know, the main focus, as I say, of our show is me. But, you know, you never know. Like I say, IKEA is amazingly open to suggestions and, you know, and in terms of the storyline. I mean, when I go in, I talk about the storyline and what I want it to be. They'll encourage me or discourage me. But basically, that has been the amazing thing. I mean, each year I've become closer and closer to writing what I really want to write about, which is really screwed up people that are looking for something, that are looking for love. And, you know, my character, like, trying to be a cog in the wheel of a workplace after, like, a life of being famous hasn't been exactly everything she thought. And now it's like trying to be anonymous in a big box store, to me, is very interesting.
And so is there an afterlife for a web series? I mean,
what occurred this year, which was amazing, was that I was approached by Sundance Productions, by Robert Redford's company, to now, you know, come up with basically shows that would be sort of like a spin-off show after Easy to Assemble. So we're actually working on a project right now to pitch as a regular television show.
But it's a completely separate TV show?
Yes, this would be a completely separate television show.
I mean, but I guess what I was trying to ask is, if you have these episodes online, I don't suppose there's any world where you make a deal with Netflix because it's already available to stream on demand. There's no, what you see is what you get with a web series.
I think so, but that's also what I never went into the show to monetize the show. I did not think that was my job. I felt that my job was to learn how to become a really good writer and a producer. And I feel that 4 years later, I've done that.
They paid you to go to grad school.
Exactly.
Ileana Douglas is an actress, producer, and writer. Her web series, Easy to Assemble, is in its fourth season now. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
To find a link to Easy to Assemble, go to our website, kcrw.com/thebusiness. Coming up after a short break, the makeup artist who helped Daniel Day-Lewis transform himself into Abraham Lincoln. To make a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
The This is Darby Maloney, producer of The Business. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this show, you would probably also like KCRW's The Treatment with host Elvis Mitchell, where he has in-depth conversations with people who are making news in the world of pop culture. Check it out in the podcast section of iTunes or on your KCRW smartphone app.
I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. The film Lincoln has some serious pedigree. Steven Spielberg directed it, Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Tony Kushner wrote the script, and it's based on part of Team of Rivals, the political genius of Abraham Lincoln. That's the book by Pulitzer Prize winner Doris Kearns Goodwin. Daniel Day-Lewis, of course, plays Lincoln in the fight to pass the 13th Amendment and abolish slavery.
Euclid's first common notion is this. Things which are equal to the same thing are equal to each other. That's a rule of mathematical reasoning. It's true because it works. Has done and always will do.
Makeup artist Lois Burwell was tasked with turning Lewis into Lincoln. She's worked on 5 Spielberg movies, including Saving Private Ryan, and won Oscar for her work on Braveheart. The Business contributor, Ari Carpel, who writes for publications including The New York Times and Fast Company, recently caught up with Burwell to learn more about her work behind the camera.
I particularly like historical pieces. I like it when you can actually take people off a monument and turn them into life. Because when you look back at historical characters and historical lives, it's very easy for us to distance ourselves. And I think it's important to make the connection that the human story remains the same. And we can use the past as a reflection of who we are now and learn from it.
So how did you do that with Lincoln?
I looked at all the photographs I could possibly lay my hands on and looked at the life cast and the death cast.
The death cast?
Yes, there's a cast that was taken of his face when he died. And actually, you know, examined that and the contrast between the two.
So that exists in a plaster or something that you were able to actually see?
Yeah. They were copies of the original. So these were, you know, sort of 3 generations down. But even so, I think it's the nearest I'm ever going to get to having my hands on Abraham Lincoln's face,
other than Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
And so how did that help you?
Well, the contrast between the two. You have something that is static, but was actually the person. I mean, purportedly the person. And then you have a photographic image, and it helps you build the gap in between the two, structurally, but as well as getting the sense of the person.
Now, you didn't use prosthetics on Daniel Day-Lewis, and yet prosthetics are so common, even for great actors like Meryl Streep and Anthony Hopkins now in Hitchcock. It's such a common way of doing it. Tell me about your choice not to use prosthetics.
Well, if you count the mole as a prosthetic, there is the mole, which we grew very fond of. But, so it was... Basically, it was part of the work. It was to do with the schedule. It was to do with the fact that Daniel Day hadn't worn makeup before and the whole idea of a lengthy makeup, I think, actually made him very, very nervous and uncomfortable.
It would normally take, 3 hours or something in the morning to do something like that?
Yeah.
Whereas
this
you would do in, 90 minutes?
Yeah. Well, an hour and 15, actually. Mm. And the thing is, it's always ideal to go for less is more. I mean, I know that's a well-trodden path and rather dull to say, but the truth of it is that the director in particular doesn't want the actor exhausted by the time they hit the set. So you really want to be able to facilitate the narrative and yet do the simplest but most efficient and effective work you possibly can.
And when you're doing that every morning, is there a team of people working on Daniel, or is it just you and him for 90 minutes? It seems rather intimate.
There was Kenny Myers and myself.
Kenny does?
Kenny's makeup. So we double teamed because it's part of the process we used, which is this process called stretch and stipple. You actually need 4 hands, not 2, because you want to hold the skin, paint it, and then use a blow dryer, you know, a hair dryer on it. On cool, so you don't bake him. But, you know, to pass air, to speed up the process. But you actually need 4 hands. Mm. And also it made it efficient and speedy. But we had to learn how to do it together so that there wasn't a feeling of two hands on the face moving separately from each other. I mean, rather than, you know, in conjunction. If you think of the difference between a massage and then two people having a go separately, right, how that would feel. I mean, that's sure, that's really distracting. So we actually practiced rather like doing sort of, you know, some kind of strange hip-hop handshake is the only way I can describe it, you know, doing a makeup simultaneously. And of course, we were in silence, so we'd mouth to each other, eyes now, you know, just mouthing it.
Well, tell us about working with Daniel a little bit and him. And you talked about being quiet for that period of time. Was that because of his process as an actor?
Yes. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I actually quite like making up people in silence, if I'm really truthful. And unfortunately, with Daniel, that was what he liked. So we dovetailed. I don't want to sound pretentious, but the only way I can describe it is when your hands are working on a face, after a period of time, it's as if the intention of what you're doing has left you, and the thought process and the hands are doing it by themselves. So you lose yourself in it. So if someone asks you a question, you're sort of broken from it. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to then find where you were and begin again.
Well, you work with a lot of powerful people, and particularly Spielberg, on many occasions now. And I'm curious about what does he demand in terms of the makeup that's, say, unique to him?
Well, he hates anything that takes too long.
That's big.
That's big. He hates anything that takes too long. Doesn't want to see it. When I say see it, doesn't want to see us doing the makeup on the set. So it doesn't want to see it being done. And would prefer if we could just make everyone ready in the morning, send them on the set so he can be alone with his actors. And all these annoyances like makeup coming in can just disappear.
And so that's how realistic really is that?
Well, it's not. But I mean, you know, but that's just one of those things. So you kind of box and cox as best you can, you know, and sometimes it will be, you know, interesting. But you know, I have to appreciate that, particularly with certain scenes, it's about the performance. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you can't have a beard half hanging off, and I don't want it to get to the point where it's just hanging on by a thread, you know.
Now, in a scene like the incredible climactic scene in the House of Representatives with the big vote with all of these men in this small space, many of whom have facial hair, how do you do what Steven Spielberg would like, which is not be doing the makeup in front of him? Or how does that work?
Normally what happens, actually, to be perfectly honest, in that I'm under a lot of those desks that you see in the film, hiding behind. My favorite was to hide behind Skylar Colfax's speaker's chair, because if the camera wasn't up high, then you couldn't possibly see me. And I could tuck down and literally be under the desk hidden. Or sometimes, if you couldn't manage that, you just throw yourself on the floor somewhere.
Is that something, as a matter of course, that you've done on many movies?
Yes. Huh. I mean, especially if the camera's suddenly coming your way and you've been an idiot and you haven't actually noticed it and they're suddenly coming. I mean, I've just collapsed into actually a bog before now, you know, in my waterproof clothes, just to get out of the shot. Or my shadow is suddenly casting a shape, you know, that kind of thing.
Lois Burwell, thank you so much.
No, thank you. You're so easy to talk to. You're marvelous.
It's fun. I think the process of what you do is fascinating, and I think it's hard to imagine sometimes, so you really bring it to life.
Well, I know that people think that it's a glamorous job, and sometimes it can be, but it isn't all glamour. I mean, one of the things we have to do is when actors have colds, you have to blow their nose.
Oh.
Sometimes for them.
That was journalist Ari Carpel in conversation with makeup artist Lois Burwell. Her most recent film is Lincoln. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone app, and you can hear the podcast wherever you download podcasts. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.